Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Circus Podcast, episode 107.
Soul set. That's French. Wee, 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 wee.
What's that siren for?
Alert, alert, alert. New show announcement.
Guys, this is a big episode. We're about to tell you guys all about our brand new circus show that we are going to premiere this summer.
I'm not ready to talk about it. I mean, I am ready to talk about it openly, but I'm not ready to talk about it openly. It's like you birth a baby and then you're out in the world. And now I feel like, oh, it's going to be out in the world.
But this is a project we've sort of been teasing a little bit on our podcast for the last couple of months. We've been working on it now for over a year. But today is the formal announcement. The new show title for our outdoor circus, open air circus, is called Stars Above. And we're building it at the New England Center for Circus Arts this July and premiering it in August or being their company in residence. And then we're going to do a 4.5-week tour all around the Northeast. We're going to be going to New Hampshire, Vermont, New York State, Massachusetts, Connecticut, all over the place. So if you live in any of those states, you'll have the chance to come catch us. The show is open air. We have a nice 24-foot round stage you're performing on with a custom aerial rig, some cool circus trailers. So there's no tent, but that should make it, for people who are anxious about COVID or who have kids who aren't vaccinated yet, a much safer, more pleasant experience.
So Josh and I have been trying to write this new show for a while, over a year probably. And it took a while to understand the topic, the point of view we wanted to talk about in this new show. And a lot of times Josh and I are inspired by music. And so we started listening to this playlist of things. And this one song in particular, and we were like, oh my God, we should write this show. And
around the ideas in this song.
Around the ideas in this song. And, I think something that is important is to acknowledge what we've been through this past year and not just forget, but make it a part of the art going forward. And we want to make a show that's fun and exciting and lighthearted, but also has moments of cathartic, emotion of letting things go of what happened this past year. I think a good show allows you to have all the emotions and
it has just layers. You have layers. The high quality circus, or in the case of Babel, high quality dance as the main top level. Yeah. And then you want things working underneath those levels to give different audience members different personal experiences.
Yeah. And I think, everyone who comes to see the show will have a slightly different idea of the exact narrative. But the overall theme will be the same, I hope, for people. And
well, you've been using this term the lost futures of things that didn't happen as kind of a theme idea. Do you want to touch on that quickly?
Yeah. So I was trying to think of something that we've all been through this past year. And I think every single person has a future that never happened that they thought was going to happen. We didn't have a baby shower. People didn't have weddings. People lost people.
People didn't have graduations.
All this stuff, or you thought you were never going to move and then you moved out of New York. Or you changed careers, right? there's a lot of things that people changed because of COVID. And it's a future that they didn't think was going to happen. They always imagined a different future. So the idea of these lost futures, the futures that didn't happen, and then how do you reconcile with that? And how do you move forward and be happy with what the new future is for you and the trajectory that's a hard word that you're on, and so watching that journey specifically in our show through the clown character and the ringmaster, that is the crux of our story, these two characters, and the narrative gets revealed through the point of view of those two characters.
And, when people think it's a new circus, what does that mean? And what does that mean for Lindsay and I? So as listeners of our podcast, which I think most of you are, certainly if you're listening right now, you're a listener. We often talk about how contemporary circus and classical circus or traditional circus are kind of useless terms. And there's people who just like contemporary and there's people who just like classical. But I think most of us like both and want to see things that incorporate both elements. So that's kind of what this show is. It's very inspired by 19th century traveling circuses, particularly in the 1820s, that went all over the Northeast. They were outdoors, no circus tent, had one or two person band, a small family, a company of people performing. And that's what we're trying to emulate in sort of a modern, fresh take. And the show is basically a day on the life of the circus lot. So you'll see the backstage world and you'll see the onstage show. And in the backstage world, we're able to do much more contemporary style circus where we have a fourth wall and we're doing acting and we're doing some of the cool things that people have been exploring in the last 10 to 15 years of circus technique. And then in the show, within the show, as we've been calling it, we have much more classical circus. It's a bit more of a presentational vibe where we do recognize the audience is there. And in this dichotomy between the offstage and onstage world, we're able to really explore who all the characters in the show are. You know, I think we have a pretty amazing cast we've managed to assemble. They're actually all American circus artists, which is something pretty unusual for circus shows, because often you're importing people from Europe, from Asia, from Africa, from Scandinavia. Of course, it's in Europe. But right now, because of COVID, we can't bring anybody in. So we really tried to find American performers who are amazing. And thankfully for us, many of these performers had to return home after COVID hit. So a lot of folks, this will be their first time performing in the Northeast, even though they're Americans. Not for everybody, but for a few. The cast is pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, I think our cast is great. I think focusing on small cast and mindful casting, because, you know, money is not something that everyone is rolling in right now, especially from a producing side. So keeping it like slender and really being mindful about who you choose. Was it honestly challenging? Because you, of course, want a big cast and you can have all these things, but it's like, do you need it? I don't know. So I'm really excited with who we have. And we have Adam Kukler, who's the clown, as I talked about. He is one of the two characters that we are telling this narrative through. Adam is like one of my favorite people. I think he's so special as a clown because he's relatable. He looks like your friend, you know, and he's just... Clowns are something that is a whole discussion point, right? And like, some people love clowns, some people don't like clowns. Can you have a circus without a clown? I don't think so. Josh doesn't think so. And Adam is one of the best. He also does cigar box juggling and hat juggling, which we will be utilizing in the show. And, you know, he's kind of worked all over the world. And now he gets to work with us.
He's also a past podcast guest, so you can go back and listen to Adam's episode. Another past podcast, we have a few past podcast guests actually in the show, is our ringmaster, Book Kennison, who's also one of the composers. He's writing a lot of the backstage music. Book has his own podcast, so you can listen to sort of the vibe of Book's music in his own podcast. But it's going to be good. Book is the kind of ringmaster most people don't expect. I think people, when they think ringmaster, think over-the-top actor who can sing. And Book is a very reserved, funny guy. And I'm excited for folks to see how he plays off of Adam and the dynamic they have on stage. Another past podcast guests, Mr. and Mrs. G, crossbow stunt act. That's going to be pretty amazing. I don't think anybody in the Northeast has seen this. For those who don't know, Mr. G, Ottavio, shoots an apple off of Naomi, his wife's head, as their finale trick. So this is a really old school proper danger type act.
Yeah, this is the one that gives me anxiety at night. What's good about them, I mean, there's so many great things about them, but they come also from a theater background. So their ability for dance and singing and performance is just so high. So adding that quality to it and this really old school style of like Ottavio learning this trade from his generations of family.
Six generations.
Is so cool. It's something that a lot of, you know, traditional classical circus families have that obviously with more contemporary circus and circus schools, you lose a little bit of. So I'm really happy that we have that element in our show. You know, I have heard this rumor going around that Hideaway Circus has been stealing all the jugglers. It's hilarious because I cannot juggle, but Josh is really pretty obsessed with juggling. And I will say this show does have some amazing
probably the juggling. Best jugglers. We have Delaney Bales, who is was voted this year's top 40 juggler and has won the International Juggle Association's juggling competitions numerous times. But she's an unbelievably gifted technical juggler and will be doing a ball and club juggling act, along with Willem McGowan, who is a former Smirko, went to the Quebec Circus School, has worked extensively in Switzerland in particular, and has a super cool Diablo number. We're going to be putting some LED lights in his Diablos and performing it in the dark at night. So I think we're going to have a pretty cool lighting effect with that act.
Yes, and we have Josh's, speaking of Smirkas, Josh's old Straps partner from the Smirkus days, Lindsay Colbert Olds, who is probably one of my favorite aerial artists, especially in, for straps. She's just incredible. The tricks she does are, I mean, so challenging, and but she's beautiful to watch in the air.
Yeah, effortless.
Yeah. So we have Josh will not be doing a straps act with Lindsay, but she will be doing her own. I think she surpassed you in the technique.
Yeah, almost certainly. And, you know, a lot of those folks we just listed are people who we've worked with in the past to some extent. But Lindsay and I also wanted to make a concerted effort to work with people who we hadn't. And there's two folks who will be new to the Hideaway Circus family in one way or the other. One is Summer Lacey, who's a New York City artist who does aerial chains along with other kinds of aerials. But most people will probably have seen her on America's Got Talent, where like Howie Mandel was super into her performance. I'm very excited for folks to see her.
I don't like Howie Mandel.
You don't like Howie Mandel?
No, there's something about him that like irks me. I don't know what. I feel like he just like tries to be like the point of like always in front of the camera. Like he's like the most important. Like he's like the ham of it all. And I don't know. Didn't he do that show Deal or No Deal too?
That sounds
deal
about right.
Or No Deal. Yeah.
Well, in addition to Summer, we also have Alexandra Fay, who graduated Circadium during the pandemic in 2020. She has a really amazing serial act. She's a scientist turned circus artist. And this will be the first time she's performing in any big show like ours. So we really have the full range of sixth generation to 1st of May. Almost everybody has a different circus background. They went to different circus schools, different training centers, learned it from their families. So we have a very diverse sort of pool of people. And of course, I can't go without saying who our musician is, which is my brother, Jacob Avener, who is an outstanding guitar player, singer, multi-instrumentalist, and he'll be doing covers of some pretty cool songs. So it'll be a mix of original music by Book Kennison, covers by Jacob Avener, and original music by another wonderful past podcast guest and famous circus composer within the circus world, Peter Bufano.
I think the music of this show is really going to be something that we'll have to do a podcast about with us two and Book and Peter and Jacob, because we've really taken a different approach to this show than any show I've seen and any show we've done. You know, we tend to like to pick music that exists and really use it for the moments of our show. We don't typically do original music.
Of which there is a lot in the show.
Right. So which we decided we wanted to do him. And obviously Peter comes from this like really trained music point of view. He's written music for every circus you could think of. And then you have Book, who is self-taught and comes from this, you know, background of circus as a performer and now is transitioning into a musician. And those two together, just it's so interesting and cool and fun to work on. And then you have Jacob, who, you know, I met when he was like 20, maybe 19, I don't know. And now he's just like such an accomplished musician and in his own right, and is covering all these songs for us. So having this kind of like three different styles and putting it into all in one cohesive sound world is really interesting. But we're definitely going to have to do a podcast just on the music of the show.
And then speaking of creative team members, we also have Jeff Kreuter doing the lighting design. Jeff's also been a man, I keep saying podcast. Jeff
has been a past
podcast guest. He's a Tony Award winner. He lit Beyond Babel. He'll light all the shows so we can get him to light for us. But he has some very cool ideas of how we could make a circus tent out of string lights. So you have to come and see that. We have Barbara Arandello on for costume design. Barbara is also working on Beyond Babel with us. She has an extensive dance background as well as theater.
Extensive dance. I mean, talking to her about fabric choices is incredibly interesting, because even the fact of like stitching needing to be stretch material is like stretch thread, you know, just so even like the seams don't pull. I mean, she's just so she's so knowledgeable about movement in dance, and I haven't met many costume designers who understand the needs of circus like Barbara does. But she also has worked almost her whole career in dance, so she's fantastic.
Well, we hired her for Beyond Babel, and when we're talking about Beyond Babel over Zoom, she had a book on her desk written by Fred Bradner, who's a former Ringling Ringmaster. I was like, what's that? And this is not a book many people have or many people read. And I was like, what's that book you have on your desk? She was like, oh, it's Fred Braden's autobiography. And from that moment, I was like, oh, this is a sign. This is definitely a sign. And I think the costumes are going to look pretty amazing now, having seen sketches and already some pieces built 2 months in advance.
Well, it's this whole idea of how do you harp on the past, or take inspiration from the past, but also still make it feel modern and new and relatable. I'm not really interested in making a period piece. I don't think you are either. I think that they're valid. I just don't have, interest in making it myself. But I think taking inspiration from different types of time periods all in one is interesting to me. Like, so not taking just from one time period, but taking from the 1940s, from the 1800s, from the 2000s, like all of that. And how do you make that mesh and work?
She also is doing these like backstage world costumes, the onstage world. So, her role really lives in both places. Another wonderful creative team member we have is Ben Sheff, on as sound designer. Ben has worked for a number of circuses. You will have seen his work in Run, Cirque du Soleil's Run, if you managed to catch that. Or in New York in Twas the Night Before. He also works extensively for Circus Mercus as their production manager. But Ben is a real sound wizard with a lot of circus experience. And it's going to be an interesting challenge to how do you make this sort of soundscape work outdoors, where you have nothing for the sound to bounce off of. You have live music, you have recorded music, you have people speaking. So it's really like a multidimensional challenge.
And one more creative team member is our friend, good friend, who I love dearly, is Spencer Novick. And Spencer is a clown, a comedy designer, a director. He's worked in...
His title particularly is comedic act designer for this.
For this show, right. But he has worn a lot of hats for other shows. He worked for Cirque du Soleil in Ka. He did Blanc de Blanc, which came to Vegas for a bit. He works
for Spiegelworld.
I mean, he's kind of one of these amazing physical movers, and does the sound effects act that he did in the Paris Festival. And Spencer is one of these people that's so good at questioning Josh. Like, Josh has something in his head and then Spencer will pull it out and then make it better. And especially for any ideas I have too. So he's helping with the comedy of the show and the clowning, and very lucky to have him too. So I think the key to being smart is surrounding yourself with smarter people than you and more talented people than you. And I do feel like we've done that on the show. I feel like the people around us are much more educated in their field than we are, which is
That's
always a good sign.
Yeah, certainly what you want. Maybe we talk a little bit about where we're going to be going this summer so folks can hear. We did mention that we're kicking it off in Brattleboro at the New England Center for Circus Arts. After that, we're heading to Troy, New York, to the Contemporary Circus and Immersive Arts Center. After that, we're heading to Catskill, New York, at the Lumberyard Center for Film and Performing Arts. Both those sites are going to be amazing as far as like visual backdrops. And then we go to the town of Wilton in Connecticut. That's in Southern Connecticut. We're being presented actually by the town. So we're on this beautiful town lot. After that, we're heading to New Paltz. After New Paltz, we're going to Ithaca, New York, to play at Circus Culture, which is an awesome circus school right in the downtown part of the city. We're setting up in their parking lot. But then after that, we're heading up to Lake Placid to perform at the Lake Placid Center for Performing Arts. Then we're heading to Warren, Vermont, to do some shows with Phantom Theater at Leroux Farm. That's going to be such a cool site. With Leroux Farm has like an open air pizza oven and
flatbread pizza
and like bar behind, you know, the performance space
and gluten free pizza.
And then we're wrapping it up in Cornish, New Hampshire, and being presented by the Upper Valley Circus Camp, which is this awesome all-ages circus camp in New Hampshire. So we're stopping in 10 different towns over this run. It'll be the first time Lindsay and I are putting together a tour like this. I'm very excited by our partners. Many of them are circus-related or arts-related. And hopefully in future years, you know, people will reach out to us and try to book us at different places. But I think 10 is a good number for us to start with, particularly since after the 10th, we have one day off before we head back down to the city to retech Beyond Babel and open that a week later.
We only have a day off if we don't have a rain date. if we have a rain date, we don't have a day off. And we will go directly from doing this show to right into tech for Beyond Babel. And, you know, I think it's incredible that we're doing these two shows now, but it's still just the two of us, you know, and now we have two big shows that we're working on. And this theme keeps coming up of like, oh, well, why aren't you hiring someone to do the blank? Or, oh, well, why aren't you having someone do that blank for you? It's like, because I can do a lot of it myself. It might be hard and challenging, but you and I can do a lot. And I think this idea that people push on to others of like, you can't do that. You have to hire someone who knows how to do it. It's like, well, you can probably figure it out. But I feel like that was a pretty quick but good overview. I feel like we divulged a lot, which makes me terrified, but I mean, it's exciting. It's good. I hope everyone who listens can come see the show at some point.
Yeah, tickets aren't that expensive. They range starting at like $15. Some sites even have free tickets when they're being sponsored, but they start at $15 for a bring your own seat. So if you want to bring your own lawn chair, your own blanket, it's an inexpensive ticket. And then upwards of $20, we have reserved seats for everybody, and even VIP seats if you want the extra special experience. So we have a variety of ticket prices, but I think most people who have a family of four should be able to come and see the show for less than $100. So we're very conscious of making it affordable, particularly in this like post-pandemic era where, of course, some people have made loads of money, but plenty of other people, particularly those in the arts, have not made any money. So we really want to make sure that folks get the chance to see this.
And even though this isn't, I wouldn't say a show for kids, it's a family-friendly show. And the kids who are 12 and under who cannot get vaccinated don't have much to do. There is like, it's very challenging, even like, you know,
you can't bring them to indoor shows is what you mean.
Right. You can't bring them to indoor shows because if not everyone's wearing a mask, like it's concerning, right, for parents. So having this show be outdoors, fully safe for kids, it's like a Pixar show, right? Like a Pixar movie. It's like for kids and adults, but adults get another level of it. That's what I hope this show is. It's like for everyone, but adults will get another level. So that's like
that's
show.
The stars above. So you can learn more on our website, starsabovecircus.com or hideawaycircus.com, both linked to the same place. And get your tickets now while you can. You still have the best choices. Also, of course, Beyond Babel has their tickets online for sale. So we hope to see you at one of our shows in the next 6 months. Is everything reopens.
All right, now that we've blabbed on about our show, on to our guest for this week's podcast.
Maxime Lorine, who is one of the co-founders of Machine de Cirque based in Quebec City. Max, many people will know from his two-person Korean plank tutorboard act, which won gold in Paris a couple of years ago, and I think lands on my top five favorite acts of all time. I think Korean plank is probably one of my favorite disciplines, and Max did it with only one partner, which also amps up the danger and the level. And what's so interesting about his life story is how he fell into circus just by living in Montreal. And it's pretty unbelievable, his circumstances and the things that he's managed to accomplish at a pretty early age, after, you know, winning all of these awards and being stars of Seven Finger shows, being part of a new company based in Quebec and learning about some of the projects that they're working on was mega interesting.
Yeah, I love talking to someone who's just so undeniably talented in a specific form of art, because to get to that point takes like such a special person. And teeterboard, Korean plank, and I still
we talk about it on the podcast. What the right word for
but,
it?
But you know, it's just it's such a high risk but high skill act, and yeah, it was awesome to talk to him. He's great. I think everyone's gonna really like it.
Well, without further ado.
Well, if you like our podcast, though, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com, and make sure to get tickets to the show this summer, starsabovecircus.com or beyondbabelshow.com. And without further ado, here is our interview with Max.
Maxime, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm really excited to talk with you. Where are we reaching you at the moment?
I'm currently in my house in Montreal, Canada.
And are you from Montreal originally?
Yes, born and raised.
You're one of the few, I feel like, that is like, yep, born and raised, not just like, no, I started at, you know, coming here for ENC. Wow.
So did you see a lot of the, like, Montreal circus scene growing up?
Well, I started the circus school when I was 11. So I really fell into it young and then just kept going. And I guess I was lucky enough that in my hometown, it was this really well-renowned circus school that allowed me to get some good skills.
But why at 11 go to circus school and not music school or dance school or something else?
I mean, actually, it wasn't my first choice. Like every good Quebecois kids, I was in a hockey league playing hockey. And after a while, my parents were allowing me to choose one sport outside of school that they would like bring me to and like encourage me to do. So after 5 years of being in a hockey team, I decided to like, oh, I want to do ski. I really love skiing. And my parents were like, well, it's kind of far and you could only go in the weekend. So maybe you should choose something else. So I was like, okay, I want to like flip. So I want to do gymnastic. And the gymnastic club for men was the other side of the city. And so my mom was like, well, there's the circus school that at this time was in Old Port, where it was is right now. And that isn't so far, and I think you could like it. And so I was like, okay, I'll try it. So I got in the night program, and then after that, I was 11. So at 12, I had to choose the high school I wanted to be with. And that school had the study sport program. And so I joined the circus.
And when you walk into the building and you're seeing everybody do these different things, from aerials to acrobatics to juggling, was there anything that like you were like, oh, that's going to be me? Anything that you were like really drawn to?
Everything was going to be me. Well, I wanted to be everything. Yeah, I before getting in the circus school, I saw an end of year show. And I was so impressed by all the artists on stage, and I thought it'd be really cool to be doing what they were doing. And yeah, that's how it started.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about what that high school program is like. We've had a few guests who've done the mise en niveau or the professional program at ENC, but I'm not sure if we've had anybody who's done the high school version. Is that a normal? I can't imagine that's a very normal high school experience.
No. Well, first of all, when you are in the whole program, so high school in Canada is 5 years. And in the whole program, we are 10. So I had another one of my age that was in the same grade as me. And then no one in the grade above over me, and then some more over. So it was very, very different than normal high schools. And you learn by yourself with books. And then you have a teacher. And if you have a question, you go see the teacher. And then he gives you the answer. So you kind of need to be quite on top of your things at school in order to make your grades okay.
You were doing remote learning before COVID even happened.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In a way, I guess.
It's like you and your books. I mean, it takes such discipline to, as a kid in high school, to just basically teach yourself. And a lot of kids are just failing at it because they need structure and class and a teacher. So it takes a special type of person to want to do that and to succeed at.
Yeah. And on top of it, in the room right next to us was like the trampoline and the acro class. So it was really easy to get distracted looking at the window. And so it would be like half days. We would do like half of the day of school in the morning, and in the afternoon it would be training, circus training.
And when did Korean plank or teeterboard come into your life? And maybe you can explain to people who are listening like a little bit of the difference between those two kinds of disciplines.
And there's different names. Every time people use different names, so there isn't like a specific name for each. I don't know, for Korean plank is the one you stay on.
That's what I have been told, that Korean plank is what you're, how I would describe it from my own definitions is Korean plank is when you stay on, and like the angle of the board is like a little different from, and it's made out of different kinds of wood than like that Russian set kind of teeter board where you have two super heavy dudes jump on one side and launch somebody much higher. So that's my definition, but how would you define it?
Well, that sounded pretty good. I mean, and also there's like so many type of just current plank. There's so many different size and the way people like to use it, and same way with the Russian board. So it's hard to really put words into things that are still like changing and adapting to what the acrobats wants and need. So,
but what drew you to that as a discipline in particular?
So when I got at school at 11, there was a dual finishing school that were doing tiddle board, and I thought they were really cool. And so they joined, they finished, they left, and then no one did tiddle board until when I was in my last year of, no, second to last year of high school. So it was my fifth year at school. The school was like, okay, maybe you could choose a specialty before getting in the professional program. And then I asked to do tiddle board, and I had different partners. And then I met Hugo, my working partner that I've been working with since like over 10 years now. We met, he's from France, and he got in the professional program at the same year as I did.
What did you feel like more pressure auditioning for the professional program or less pressure? Cause you had gone up through the high school and seen it all as you went.
I mean, it's kind of very strange. Like the teacher or like my parents in a way at this point, and they're like, they grade me, but yeah, I don't know. It was a bit like I was at home there. So in the audition, it was really like I was just doing what I used to do. And I don't know. I didn't feel, they didn't make me feel I was in danger. So it was okay. But I know for some student in high school, they have, it's not always easy, the program. So some people are having a harder time at the program. And so it's already like unsure if they actually want to keep doing circus or not and stuff. And so when they audition, sometimes it's more stressful because the teacher kind of knows more, they doubt and their weakness also. So
in school doing Korean plank, one of the things that, or teeter board, that's like the most exciting to me about that act, and particularly your act with Hugo, because it's only the two of you, is when somebody like doesn't perfectly land and you got to make it back on the board before the other person comes down. But because of that, it's like a much more, I think, from an outside perspective, like high injury, high risk act than say like club juggling or even contortion.
Or even an act with three people versus two.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering, like, in school, after school, was that ever like an internal concern of like the danger of the number in particular?
Well, it really changes the way you approach the discipline also. And the way we use theater board now is new, because when I first started school, like I told you, like two guys finished in duo when I got in school, but they joined Cirque du Soleil and created Corteo, the theater board.
Oh, sure. Act.
And they became a trio or even four at one point. So there wasn't really duos, people doing duos, because it didn't seem too worth it. But Hugo and I kind of like the way that it's like very intimate and how we depend on each other. You know, we don't have any like exit, easy way to like save ourselves with someone else. So it was interesting to us to explore that. And it's like you develop a way of working together. And yes, there's more risk in a way, but also it's a lot more easy to understand and predict what the other one will be doing. When you're three, there's already more factor of like not understanding what's going on, because someone thinks he's falling, so he wants to get in, but he wants to come back. So it's a lot, much about communication, this discipline. So yeah, like Hugo, I feel like I can read his head when we're jumping, you know, like I know exactly, I'm almost better than him, you know, like, oh, he's short and he doesn't know yet. Maybe I should tell him, and then you know, it's like very... very satisfying in that way to be doing tiddle board at just two, because you really depends on the other. So it's like when it works, it's very satisfying.
I was going to ask a different question, but now I have another question. When you're doing your act, do you guys have like little, like when Josh and I are doing the podcast, we have like little signals to be like, I'm going to talk next, or, you know, or like, this is now it's this time. Do you guys have little like cues for each other when you're like, oh, you're going to miss the board, or, you know, I messed up or anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tons. We have like very clear ones that are conscious, like next, meaning my next jump is going to be a trick. So I want you to push me well. No, meaning I'm not going to push you well. You know, like very basics. And then short, meaning I'm going to push you, but I'll be forward, so I'm not going to push you as well. Or off, meaning I'm not going to land on the board well enough. And then there's like the thousands other unconscious that you kind of develop through times, and you can't really put words into it, but it's just like, yeah, it's very visual and like sensitive in a way that it, I think that's like for most of disciplines that you do for a very long time, you develop like a unconscious language of how to use it and use it in a way that doesn't involve too much risk.
One thing that sort of strikes me about your background as you're sort of describing it is that many circus performers who go to school come from somewhere else and have already been like, all right, I'm leaving my hometown. I'm hitting the road to travel and do circus. But not until after you graduate the professional program are you really leaving where your hometown, I'm assuming. So maybe you could talk a little bit about like what that transition was like, going and doing the Paris Festival, working for Cirque and Seven Fingers, and leaving this like perfect circus bubble and taking it out, you know, into the real world.
Yeah, I was one of the few students, or maybe the only one, I don't know, like still living at my parents when I was for my whole time in school. And well, I was so excited to go on adventures and touring and stuff. And it, fortunately, it like worked. I didn't spend so much time home in the last 10 years, actually, since COVID. That's why at first I was almost happy, because I needed to spend more time home, because for the last time I was just always on touring or visiting or doing something. So, so when I finished, we were just like, and Hugo too was, even if he's not from Montreal, he was very excited to like go on tour and do shows and perform what we've been working on. And we were just saying yes to the most thing we could do, you know, like there was no way we would say no for any reason, you know, like if we were available, it would be a yes. It still kind of is like that though. And yeah, doing Cirque du Domain, it's very like a, imposing for circus artists, because a lot of people look up to that festival. And but before going to festival, we did a replacement in Cirque du Soleil for 4 months. We joined the show Zarkana.
Sure.
They played in Radio City for a while, and then they moved to the show, did a little tour. They went to Madrid, and in Madrid the arena, the stage was a bit smaller. So there was an act of Wheel of Death, and the Wheel of Death couldn't come down from the ceiling because it was too small. And so the director decided to cut the act because of that. So we replaced the Wheel of Death act, and we got teamed up with another duo and created an act. And that was very fun. And it was right before Cirque du Domain, so it was like a good way also to do, like, we were doing 8 to 10 shows a week. So it was very good to like get stabilize our tricks that we've been working on at school and stuff. And so when we arrived at Cirque du Domain, we were kind of like feeling ready technically. And then right before, we did the 2 weeks at Hugo's old circus school in France in Châtellerault. And we did a formation continue. It's like a little 2 weeks formation where we just worked on the act that we were going to present. It was like a big deal. We were like, the whole year was planned around this event of like making Cirque du Domain. So, and we even made our coach from Montreal, he came to France to like coach us the 2 weeks before, and then he was there during the festival. So we were really well surrounded. So that was very fun, a good ambience, and we were feeling confident and really happy to be there. And for sure,
and it was you guys won gold, right?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so it also paid off pretty well.
Yeah, gold, audience prize, muscle prize, and then like another one.
Oh, yeah, wow.
It went pretty well.
So watching your act, I think it's so Josh and I met in grad school like 8 years ago now. I didn't really know much about circus. I was into theater, and he's like, no, the circus is where it's at. And then he basically, for the next like year after we met, gave me like a crash course on circus and showed me every video that there ever was. And one of them was your video at Cirque du Domaine. And I remember being like, wow, this is so cool, like amazing. But now watching it again, so many years later with like a much more knowledge, part of the most interesting choice of your act is the choice of no music and then music and no music. And especially hearing that you have like little signals, utilizing the silence of an act is like such a choice. So I want to hear kind of where that came from. Where did you start creating the act, and the choice of silence is interesting.
Well, like it's a silent of non-music because actually the board makes a lot of sound. So it was also a bit like, you know, sometimes when you put a music to try to hide the sound, and we didn't really like the fact, we kind of like that the theater board was making sound. So let's assume it, that it's making sound. And we thought it was interesting that people can also understand that we communicate while jumping, you know? So that was like the main reason we chose silence. And also, especially in Cirque du Domaine, like a lot of people ask us if it was a good idea, or do you think it's going to work? And actually it was the best decision we took because the audience was so much with us and we could be so much with them because they could hear everything how we would react, and we would get how they would react. So it was really great. Like we felt so much like connection with the audience at Cirque du Domaine because of that silent. And yeah, we chose a piece of music because, you know, we thought it would be fun to go in something more, you know, it's violin. It's a little bit more like aerial. So it's fun to change the mood from like the boom, boom, that is very imposing sometimes. And Hugo and I really like to, like, there's a part of more comedy and stuff. And for sure, it's in silent. You can, you don't have to follow a rhythm. You can get your own rhythm. So you can be more, you can more adapt to every night. You know, it's not always the same length or something. So it can stay more, more alive being in silent, because you don't have to follow like impose cues and stuff.
So I'm putting your backstory together and guessing a little bit, but I'm assuming soon after that is when the Seven Fingers creation for sequence 8 comes into the picture. And yeah, if I remember correctly, it's you and Hugo, and then also essentially a lot of the troupe that's now Barcode, which is another Canadian-based circus company. But I think it's a lot of people's dreams to be in an original cast of a Seven Finger show and have that built, you know, around you and the other performers. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what that creation process was like and, you know, your experience with that show.
Yes, absolutely. So actually, all of us were in the same promotion at school. Barcode. I did 3 years of school with the Barcode company, Alex, Eric, Tristan, and there was also Devin and Colin. Those were the two others, and Camille. And so in first year, at the summer of our first year at school, the Seven Fingers had a little shows outside at the old port of Montreal, and they contacted us, and that's how we first met the Seven Fingers and started working with us. And it went super well. We had so much fun that summer, and they seemed to really enjoy the way we were working, so they offered us to make a creation together. So we were really excited about that. So that's kind of how it all happened. And what was amazing is that on top of the creation time that we had together, we kind of like were working together for the last 3 years at school. So we had really a solid like complicity and stuff. So it was very strong to be working with people that you feel so close with, you know. And I think in a way you can tell also on stage that like connection.
So was the whole cast just the whole your whole graduating class?
Not the whole.
How many weren't in it? Like, that would suck to be the prof. Shit.
No, it was about half.
Okay. That's less. Was it who directed Sequence 8? I can't remember. Was it Shayna or?
Seb and Shayna, yeah.
Oh, Seb and Shayna. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's also an interesting show with the set. I guess Seven Fingers always has a sparser set, but I did like the frames and I remember the mat being really interesting because it looked like wood or it looked like a floor, like it was printed.
Yeah. That was such a fun treat for the acrobats we were to have like a whole stage on mats. And now it's more and more common. And Australian company Circa always use it. Now most of the new Seven Fingers shows use it. And there's more and more because it's such a, it saves so much injury. And you could do so much more also when you
have a mat.
Yeah, have a mat.
So when did you guys decide to start your own company, and what was the impetus for that?
So Hugo and Raph and Johan, the two other circus artists in Machine de Cirque, were a year above us at school, and we kind of got along really well. And when we did a special event once with Cirque du Soleil again in Buenos Aires, and that we really remember vividly, the four of us, this moment. It was like before we did Sequence 8. And we did the event. It went well. And we had a drink. And then we were like talking about how we could make a show, the four of us. And like at first it was kind of more like street show or like, I don't know, something very like just four guys messing around, you know, like doing stupid things. And then we're like, oh, yeah, it'd be great. We can call it, like, we had names, ideas, and stuff. And it just, like, it was a night of, like, having ideas and stuff. And then it kind of stopped there. We did our things. We did Cirque de Main. We did Sequence 8. And then Vincent Dubé, which is the brother of Raphaël Dubé, one of the duo jugglers guys, he had like a funding to make a research around balls falling onto drums and making rhythm. And so he was looking for jugglers to come and research with him. So he asked Raph and Johan, and he also asked Fred Le Brasseur, which is the musician of Machine de Cirque now. And so they did like kind of a research around that apparatus. And then after that period, he was like, I would like to do a show. And then Raph and Johan are like, well, we would really like to work with Max and Hugo. Maybe we could do something out like a little bit bigger to make like a full show. And Vincent was into it. We met Vincent. He came to see Sequence 8 and stuff. And so that's kind of how it got planned. We like made something and then started like some little period of research. And it kind of really like overlapped with Sequence 8.
How did you guys come up with the name Machine de Cirque?
Well, The first grant that Vincent got for this project was, he's also an engineer. He's a circus artist, but also an engineer. And he really wanted to add like machines to the show, like the idea of like balls dropping and making rhythm and stuff. And so that's where it came from, basically. And in the end, we realized that it's more the humans that are the machines in the show right now, but it's a different way to see it.
And are you guys a collective? Is it one leader? How do you organize internally?
So Vincent Dubé is the director of the company. And the four of us and Fred, the five of us, we're the co-founder of the company. And so we are kind of like the center of the company. And then now there's like other shows with other artists, but we're still like are the base, the foundations of the company. And so we're always trying to see how we can bring something interesting to the company and how the fact that we're the five of us, how can we make something unique out of it?
I was just about to ask, so it was the first show just five guys? Was the five of you, is it normally just five people?
Yeah. And so, four circus artists and one musician, yeah.
So then I guess that leads me to my question of how do you approach making a show with four artists? Do you all have secondary disciplines? How do you think about show structure and acts and keeping the audience engaged? Because, you know, I think people sometimes think, oh, more artists make a better show.
Yeah.
In air quotes, you know, but then you see like small shows and it's just as engaging. So how do you guys kind of think about it and approach it?
Well, in general, a smaller show, often the strength you get of it is the intimacy you have more with the artist. And so I think that's definitely one of the strengths of the show, is that when the show finishes, a lot of people feel they know us from watching us on stage. And also, like, if I compare to like Sequence 8 that we did just before, the challenge for us was very different, because Sequence 8 was a lot about fluidity and like connection and stuff. And Machine de Cirque is much more about humor and having fun. And so it's another type of connection, and it's another way of being on stage, you know? And so that was very fun for the artist Hugo and I were, to like have a different challenge. And also, of course, being just four on stage is a fun challenge as for the performer you are, because you get more time on stage and you get more
range,
more depth of different things you can do on stage. You just don't do the one thing you're really good at. You can like explore other things, you know?
Yeah.
And that was important with Hugo from the start, that we really wanted to be more and more involved in the creation process and develop different things. So it kind of makes, actually, our path really makes sense in that way, because we started with Cirque du Soleil, then we joined Seven Fingers, where Seven Fingers already, they're really listening to the artist and basing their show from the artist. So already that's that. And then Machine de Cirque, where we're really involved in the creation process, and we're even less artists on stage. And now Ghostlight, where we're just the two of us. So
let's talk about Ghostlight for a minute. I watched some of the videos, the promotion material online. A few things about it really interesting. I'd love to hear you talk about the technical additions you've made to the tutor board with it spinning and making, being recorded. But what is the show about? And maybe you could tell us a little bit about the plans for it.
The show basically is about, there's like many, many layers, I guess, because it's definitely the longest creation process I've ever done on the show. It's been 4 years now. We've started like 4 or 5 years that we've had our first like residency and doing research. And we, at first the goal was like, okay, so we've done a lot of things together, and like, what's the next step? Well, making a show is just the two of us is a pretty good challenge. And it feels that from the experience we have, there's something we could tell that would be interesting. And we felt that it was like right to do it. So we had the, you know, like the inside fire to like keep doing, because it's a lot of work and job and you need a lot of patience. So we had this fire inside to like, okay, yeah, let's make it happen and let's be patient and like do the right steps. And so basically we started just to see how can we explore. We had like different challenges, but we really wanted to present the theater board as we see it, you know, which is like much more than just a tool to jump in the air, you know? And so we're looking at how can we put it as much possible in value. So it's really like, it's the only discipline in the show. It's in the middle of the stage, surrounded with like a white mat where like the focus goes into it directly. And then we're like, okay, how can we like make it even better? So we had this idea of like, make it mics on it, so we can really, everyone can hear like it crack, work, and people can hear us even better. Then, you know, so when it's in silence, it's even more amplified what we do and what you can hear from us doing. And so there was that. And then there was the idea of like making it turn, which is a whole other universe of possibilities with that disciplines. And so we made that. And the idea of first of turning was because we also really liked that people could watch Teeterboard from different angles. You know, when you see it from facing, you see so much more different things, so many more different things than like when it's not normally on profile. So we were excited about like showing different way, you know, like if you show the same thing profile and then from facing all the second, the audience realized much more different things and stuff. So that was exciting for us. And also when it turns, it becomes like a complete other discipline, actually, because it becomes like three-dimensional and jumping isn't working as well. So it's like, how can we use the floor better and stuff? So yeah, I could talk for hours about that project. So you can interrupt me if you want.
No, this is great. So when will it premiere? What are the, is it for theaters? Presumably it's a theater show.
Yeah, it's a theater show. And we really made it as a theater show. We also have like we played a lot with the, I think it's also in reaction to Machine de Cirque that was a bit like fireworks a bit. The show is very like dynamic and fun. So we really wanted to stay with like a more simple base. So we wanted something very like épuré. I don't know what's the word for that. Like very simply like the aesthetic isn't too charged, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have like a round mat with a board and a white screen. So we really like the idea of having like a blank page where we can like add the spark of color through the show. And what was the question?
Just like when can we come and see it?
Oh, okay, yeah. So we were supposed to premiere in May last year. Obviously it got delayed. And then we moved everything. It went back and forth. And then finally we actually premiered last October in France, in Hoche, at the festival Circa. You guys
The one with like multiple tents, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's actually the biggest circus festival in France. So it was like a really big deal. And France is one of the biggest, the most, how can I say this? Where there's, it's the center of circus. There's a lot of circus going around and being created in France. And so it was very stressful to premiere there. That was in the plan at first.
But was it when you were premiering it, were people like wearing masks and like it was still like COVID protocols?
Yeah. At this point, people were less strong about the protocols than in North America, but they were still masked, but people were kind of close to each other. So it felt a bit like an audience, but still with, you could only see the half of the face. And also we were the first company in the last like 20 years from Quebec to play there. So that was very like a big deal. But there was like a lot of pressure there and we didn't perform so much the couple months before because of COVID and stuff. So it was we were super grateful and stressful to be there. And we like really like the day before we still thought it could get canceled because the city next to the festival got like a red code. So they had to close everything. And so every week was like a surprise. And so like even like 20 minutes before getting on stage was like, this is happening. Can you believe this? You know, like we're going on stage on 2020. Yeah.
Awesome. How has it been as far as like keeping your body in shape this past year? Because of course, you know, in a regular year, circus performers would maybe be doing their act multiple times a week. So it stays in you. So will you need to ramp up your training again? Have you been training in quarantine? What is that like?
So when it first happened, I think for a lot of artists, it felt good actually to have like a break for the first like couple of weeks, month. And then after a while, I was like, okay, I'm ready to start now. I'm ready to go back. And I don't know, circus artist is a very big word for many different people and different way of approaching the circus art. And so for me, I'm not like, I don't do circus for skills so much anymore. And Like the last 10 years, my training has been doing shows or creations. And so going in a gym or like just training without any reason is very strange to me. And so it's still been like a bit weird and like trying to convince myself that it's worth doing things for no reason of, I don't know. Yeah. So it's been hard sometimes to keep training. We were lucky enough to still do some little project. We did like some shows last summer. We did the shows in October. And then in January, we like worked again on Ghostlight and stuff because we wanted to make some things better. Because also, for sure, once you premiere in front of an audience, you have so much answer. And from like the creation, from being all by yourself and then to like show it to the world, there's like clear answers like, oh, okay, yeah, that doesn't work. Or like, oh, this actually really works. We could like push that, you know, and there's like so many answers. So I don't know, for us also, a creation process is a lot about showing it and reworking it. And yeah, so it's been hard because it's been on pause, and but not really, always stand by. And yeah.
So is Ghostlight basically the whole A, how long is the show? And B, is it really just focused all around the teeter board, or do you guys do your what did you and Ugo? Am I saying that right?
Okay. No H.
Okay. What did you guys like study as your second kind of discipline mm-hmm. at school?
I was doing fixed trapeze. I was in sequence 8 and in machine de cirque. I'm doing trapeze in the show. Mm. Ugo has been doing a bit more acro dance and many other things. Didn't have like one specific second discipline. And so we've always been doing other things, but that was kind of also the challenge, was really to not be doing other things and really focus on the teeter board and get more depth out of this discipline. And for us, it really amazes us, especially the fact that we're two. So for sure, it becomes about relations. Like you don't need to do much, and it seeing two people on stage represent relation. And on a teeter board, there's already so much symbol just being on balance on a teeter board. If one left, the other falls. So already, like, how can we use really what the teeter board says by itself, kind of, you know, and us being on it, what it represents. And so that's really the base of where the show starts. And the dramaturgy of the show was really based on what the symbol of a teeter board in a relationship, you know? And we were really like amazed how it like physicalize things that are normally abstract, you know, like how you depend on the other one and how you relate on the other one, how you need the other one to like go up and stuff, you know? So it was very easy to find a lot of connections with the discipline and what we wanted to talk about and like develop a story in a way.
So Lindsay and I have been talking a lot about what kind of shows can happen this coming summer. And we have a plan to do an outdoor circus show in New England. But I saw you guys, or Machine de Cirque, had a show called Truck Stop that is essentially an outdoor show that unfolds from a truck. I'm not sure if you're in it, but would you mind speaking a little bit about that as a project? I don't think I've ever seen any kind of set like that before. And it seems kind of perfect for coronavirus in a way.
Yeah, totally. Well, Truck Stop is an idea that was there like many years ago. And it's basically a truck that opens up in a stage, like you mentioned. And it was it was like the anniversary of Canada, like 250, I don't know. It was like, there was like a call for project for Canada's birthday that year. And Machine de Cirque proposed that project and it got accepted. So we made the truck and we like crossed Canada with it. And what was really excited about that project is that you can go everywhere. So you don't need like to have a structure. So we can go. So we went to like a lot of like places that don't have theaters and that people don't normally see shows. And so we also gave workshop with the some Native Americans and stuff. So it was very, it was a community aspect to the project also. And that was very exciting about it. And we've been talking to reuse truck stop for COVID, of course. And it's been harder because it still is a big structure. So it implies having people gathering. And people are still not so exciting about gatherings. So, yeah. So I think this, like 3 weeks ago, we just decided that we will do something in a smaller scale for this summer again, instead of Struxo. But one day we'll bring it back for sure.
That's what I definitely want to see. One thing I wanted to ask about, because you guys started off with the original show being the co-founders, and then over time you've brought in more artists. You know, I think there's been a conversation, I'm sure you're aware of it, particularly of last summer, about getting more diversity into casts of circus shows. And of course, when you're a producer like Lindsay or I, or a director, it's kind of a different job, right? Like, we have people submit to us, and then we can pick from submissions, you know, who balances the cast. But it's kind of a different game when the artists themselves are the ones creating the show and their friends. And then all of a sudden, like, five guys, you know, are all best friends and they make their show, but there's no girl in it, or there's no X or no Y being balancing it out. So how do you guys think about that? And when you've cast shows after your first show, what kind of like challenges and thoughts go behind that?
Yes, for sure. We're very sensitive about that. And we're trying to pay, be more as much as sensitive as we can be about it. The other projection has, of course, more women and more diversity in the creative team, but it's still, for sure, it's a lot about like connection and how you meet people. So it's harder because sadly in the community right now, there isn't a lot of diversity. You know, it's not like if we don't pick diversity, it's just in the circus community, we're missing diversity. And I think the problem is more, it's just like, how come there's no more diversity in the circus world, you know, like how come there's not more circus artists that are different, like that aren't like white boys, you know? And so we're trying to be very sensitive about it, and we do our best, but for sure the original cast doesn't help us with the image because we're just like five guys on stage. But it's really that I think more and more also, like, for sure, the company is still growing and growing. And as the more we grow, the more we have also like leverage to be able to like choose who we want to work with and be more conscious about our decision and how can we make the situation better for everyone.
So best place to tour and worst place to tour. You don't have to say worst. Best place to tour?
I want to know the worst because it's not like offensive. It's just like, where is the worst place? Like, to me, America's probably the worst place to tour because it's, from an outside perspective, it's like the longest jumps. And you're like, versus Europe where it's like an hour drive to the next spot versus like six.
But so already there's like, you can split the question in two. It's like way of touring and places to tour. Because the way you tour, you can make every city great, you know? And so for sure, touring, like doing one-nighters, so come in, loading, show, load out, and then going to another city is very exhausting. And you don't get to enjoy so much where you are. For me, my experience in the U.S. is mostly university, because that's where we play more often. So it was very exciting to, like, discover campus and stuff, like things that I would see only in like movies and stuff. So
yeah, you miss that normal part of life.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, especially like the American version of that, which is like really on another level.
And I don't know. Also, I had fun because there often they would ask us to give like workshop and stuff. So we would like kind of meet up with some of the students studying in arts and stuff. So I don't know, I had like good time touring in the US because of the way it was organized was interesting. And often it would be more than a show per city. So
what was your favorite? What was your favorite stop on the US tour?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I guess the first place we went in the US with Machine de Cirque was New Haven.
Sure.
Arts and Idea.
Yeah.
And they were everyone was so welcoming and so nice, and it was very nice. So I have a good memory because also it was related to the first shows we were doing. We also performed in New York in New Victory Theater.
Yeah.
And that was challenging because we were doing two shows a day. And it was for only kids, so it's a very different audience. So you have to adapt the show. And
I think it's called Company C, maybe. It's a French company. I don't totally remember. But we saw them at New Vic, and they did a very, very serious, only hand-to-hand, banquine-style show. It was like an hour long of hand-to-hand, basically. And these kids in the audience could not handle it. Like, after like 10 minutes of it, they were all just like chit-chatting. It's a tough, it's a beautiful venue in a great spot, but it is a very family-oriented audience.
Yeah. And also we do, in the Machine de Cirque show, we do a towel act. So we get naked behind towel. And we had this whole discussion with New York because normally when we do the show for kids, for family, we always keep the act, but for just kids, it kind of feels funny to be naked in front of just kids, and they get crazy. So normally we cut the version, and often a kid's show is like an hour instead of an hour and a half. So it's like one of the act that we cut. And New Victory really wanted it, but they didn't wanted it us to be naked. They wanted us to be in underwear. And then we're like, well, what's the point of this whole act is about being like vulnerable behind a towel. And then if we keep underwears, it's not going to be funny. So we have this funny argument. And finally, we didn't have it. But I was very curious to imagine how can we do a towel act without being naked. Anyway.
Oh, well, I'm excited to see Ghostlight and Truck Stop when COVID abates a little bit. I do want to ask you the same three questions.
Wait, if I remember this correctly, is there a video coming out of one of your shows?
Oh, yes. La Galerie, the creation before Ghostlight, which is more like a group show, made a court-métrage, a short movie, at the beginning of the year in February. And there's going to be but it's like a real, like, made with a set, and like we went to a museum to film and stuff. And so it's really like, it's not just a captation from the show. It's like a concept and a like little story. So
awesome.
That's exciting.
When is that coming out?
I think it's still going to take a while. Maybe like in September, I think. Yeah.
And it'll be, you go to movie festivals with it, or it'll be on the internet, or do you know how you'll release it?
I think Machine de Cirque is very new to this world, and it's a whole other way of working and figuring out stuff. So I think we're still figuring out how to, like, I don't think we have someone yet that like would distribute the short movie and stuff. So I don't think we have a plan yet for that.
Well, Netflix, if you're listening, sounds like there's some good circus product available.
Yeah, all the Netflix executives listen to our podcast.
Okay, so the same final three questions all of our guests get. The first one is, has there been a piece of advice, either really good or really bad, that somebody has given you and it's stuck with you?
I mean, it's not an advice. I feel most people have a really specific idea of what a circus artist is, and often isn't exactly the case. I would say so. There's something about like also like sometimes letting go of what people think of what you do and what you actually believe you do. And I think that is also like something that you don't need to always fight for. And sometimes it's just like try your best to do what you want to do. And it isn't going to like picture exactly how you would imagine. Yeah.
Great. Second question. Is there a book or a movie or a TV show, anything circus related that you love that you would recommend somebody experience or watch? And it can't be a Machine to Cirque show. Anything other than that.
I wouldn't have said Machine to Cirque show. Well, I mean, for me in France, I've seen the worst and the best shows in my life. And because there's so much diversity, and for sure, there's some shows that I've seen that I would love everyone to see, you know? And so there's maybe, yeah. And I don't know, one of the shows now that comes to me is like, there's this company called Cirque Trotala, and they did a show called Matamar. And I saw it like 7 years ago, and I still think about it sometimes, you know? And there's like really shows that marks you. And
what was special about it?
Well, for sure, the fact that you're in a tent really like sets ambience right away. And there's something so like very felt, you know, nothing felt like a show off. Everything felt more like you were living something, and like everything about it, like the audience was like, it was like a ring, and the audience was over the stage. So you would watch the show from up, you know.
Oh, cool.
It really felt like a false au lion. Like, you know, you really felt like the artist like couldn't go anywhere. And they would like, for me in shows in general, I love transformations, you know. And when you see someone becoming something else, you know, and you feel like you follow this transformation. And it was like all about that, like seeing people becoming other things, and it would be weird, sometimes funny, sometimes more, a bit more dramatic. And I don't know, I came out like really like feeling something strong. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I know there's always that one show in your life that like is like, oh man, that show I can't ever stop thinking about. And I always wonder what it is for everyone, because it's always different. But you know, like what is it that you just like want to emulate when you get older and make your own work? Like, what is it? What was that show? You know, so that's cool that was yours. I also think that having a show where you really watch a character start from point A and then go to like Z is such a better show than watching a character go from like point A to B, you know? And you're like, well, that was a fun little like journey that they didn't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then when they really go somewhere, it's always like, how do you accomplish that?
It's also funny that you say that.
Point A to B, at least there's something. You know, I feel in circus show, there's so many like challenges, like technical, like the artists and what you need, the lighting and stuff, that it's hard sometimes to focus on like the dramaturgy, because there's so many other challenges that are, could feel more important at that time. So I don't know. I feel it's like, and it's new circus. Contemporary circus is still like young and like searching for itself. So it's very exciting to see the different branches it takes.
What were you going to say?
No, you asked it.
Okay. So the final question that we have is, who do you think we should have on our podcast?
Like anyone?
Any circus person who you think would be an interesting interview.
And they don't have to be a performer. But they can be.
Well, the musician we have in Machine de Cirque, Fred Le Brasseur, is amazing and overwhelmingly crazy to interview. So that could be an experience.
Great.
We are often pairing up when we're on tour and we do interviews. It's often me and him. And so I can like a bit like make the one asking question understand that he's joking.
I know we've had a few interviews where a person says an answer and it's like, is that it? Were they joking or is this serious?
There's this one time we, at the beginning of Machine de Cirque, we did like a preview of the show in front of only like people that would get the show's diffuser. And after there was a talk And Vincent was there, so he could like give like the details about the space we need and stuff, and like who is it for, and answer some question. And he asked Fred to come. So we did like we finished with Teeterboard. So after like me, I went to like just wash my face and drink some water. And I was only hearing from the lodges, the people talking, and Fred became like a comedian, a comedy show, you know? So he would like stop, and people that were so serious in the audience started pouring, laughing. Everyone was like cracking up. And there was Vincent, the director next to it, just like would add like really random, like, oh, and we could fit in smaller height.
Or he's like trying to do business.
Yeah, trying to fit like actual.
Like book our show. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, apparently, a lot of people asked if he was doing a solo show. And they were more interested in the solo show of Fred than the show.
Awesome. We'll add that to the list of things to see. Maxime, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so much fun talking with you. Best of luck with figuring out what kind of show you can do this summer. Hopefully we can be there in the audience to see it.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And that was our interview with Maxime. If you want to get tickets to our upcoming circus touring around the northeast of the U.S. from August to September, you can learn more about that at starsabovecircus.com. If you're living in New York City or you're traveling there this fall and want to come see our dance show Beyond Babel, running at the Gym at Judson off-Broadway on Washington Square Park, you can get tickets at beyondbabelshow.com. If you use the code podcast for either show, you'll get a secret little discount.
If you like our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. Hope you guys have a good rest of your week. Things are hopefully looking up, and hopefully we'll also see you guys in person at our shows. Make sure to come say hi. Okay, bye.
Catch you on the next one.
Our podcast is also available on Circus Talk, the international circus community's online resource and employment tool. If you are not a member yet, register and find your spotlight with Circus Talk today.